Good morning. It's great to be here this morning. It's 2026, and the original audience for this text was probably a group of believers living about 50 to 70 years after Jesus' resurrection, likely written to encourage them and help them remain strong in their faith in a troubled time in their lives. Domitian, the emperor of Rome at that time, was likely creating fear amongst the believers with threats and possible acts of persecution and a shift towards authoritarianism where he was demanding everyone's loyalty. In contrast to the government, the believers were living with at that time, John closes chapter 20 by saying, "These things are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." Reminding the believers that their faith would lead them to a place where they have to choose what they believe about Jesus, who he is, and what he is doing in their lives and the world. Before the closing sentence in chapter 20, we read about how Jesus encounters the disciples after his resurrection. It was still the first day of the week. Mary Magdalene had found the tomb to be empty and then encountered the risen Lord. She went and told the disciples about her experience. And now we find the disciples in a house behind locked doors, afraid of the Jewish authorities. The authorities that had ordered the killing and followed through on it. Now the tomb where Jesus was supposed to be was empty, and Mary was telling them that Jesus was alive. I'm guessing the disciples were a bit shaken. Was it for real? Was Jesus really alive, or had his body been taken? Would they be held responsible? Would the authorities come knocking at their door? Would they have a similar fate to Jesus? Maybe they were even actually a little scared or fearful of seeing Jesus. They had let him be taken and crucified. Peter had denied him three times. Was Jesus going to be angry or disappointed with them? I imagine there were many emotions and wonderings passing through the group. Then the next thing we know, Jesus appears among them, having apparently passed through the locked doors, and greets them with the words, "Peace be with you." He then shows him his hands and his side. The fear that had been present was replaced with joy. And Jesus says to them once again, "Peace be with you." I imagine the proclamation of peace that Jesus proclaims is comforting. There's people in your life sometimes when they say something, there's a voice that's just, when they say it, you believe it because it's just comforting, it's peaceful, and you know that everything is going to be okay. And I imagine that is the voice and the tenor that they heard from Jesus that day. We're not sure why, but Thomas missed that whole first encounter. The disciples had filled him in on what had happened, yet he says, "I'm going to have to see Jesus' hands and his side, even put my fingers in the wounds to know that this is true." So 8 days later, we hear that they're still in this locked house. And once again, Jesus is suddenly among them and says, once again, "Peace be with you." He then tells Thomas to look at his hands and put his finger into his side and believe. And Thomas says, "My Lord and my God." It clicked. Thomas believed. Jesus says, "It's wonderful that you believe now because you have seen me. Yet there will be many who believe without ever seeing me, and they will be blessed. As humans, I think we have a tendency to live into the adage of seeing is believing. In our world right now, we have information flowing at us 24/7, telling us about all the things happening around the world, in our country, in our towns. We don't have to walk out our front door to see it. And unfortunately, we have become pretty conditioned to believe what we see and read. I wonder, though, how do we shift to what Jesus told Thomas, where we believe without having to see, where believing is our seeing? A few weeks ago, I shared that I was planning to take a sabbatical in May to go with 9 others to Israel-Palestine on a work and sightseeing trip. Our group met this past week and made the decision to officially postpone that trip until next May. But last weekend, the leader, Dorothy Jean Weaver, sent an Easter message from Daoud Nassar, who is the director of an organization called Tent of Nations, an organization that we planned to work with for a few days while we were in the area. I want to say that yes, I believe in Jesus Christ, the risen Lord, and he is working in our world today. Yet it feels impossible sometimes to see that, especially right now in places like Palestine and Iran and Lebanon and Nigeria and so many other places. But when I read the letter from Daoud, I was taken aback. His words were such an encouragement, just as the words of John were probably an encouragement to the believers all those years ago. I think that this letter is a testimony to of a family that has chosen to believe in the resurrected Jesus and then seeing him at work in their world today, when it would likely be much easier to see and believe that there is no hope. I want to share that letter with you, but before I do that, I want to share a little bit about Tent of Nations, who they are, and a little bit about their history. So Tent of Nations is an educational and ecological family farm committed to nonviolent resistance, environmental stewardship, intercultural education, and connecting people with the land. It serves as a living model of nonviolent action, faith-based community building within the context of Palestine in the world. Their mission is to build bridges between people and between people and the land through creative resistance, education, and environmental stewardship, striving to cultivate understanding, respect, and sustainability by working in harmony with the land and with one another. They live by 4 guiding principles: to refuse to be victims, to refuse to hate, to act on their faith, and to believe in justice. The Tent of Nations stands on a 100-acre family farm about 6 miles southwest of Bethlehem in the West Bank. The land was purchased by the Nassar family in 1916. The family holds original registration and deed documents dating from the Ottoman era. Despite these registrations, in 1991, the Israeli authorities declared the family farm and surrounding lands state land. Since then, the family has engaged in long-lasting legal proceedings with the Israeli military courts, the appeals courts, the Israeli Supreme Court to re-register and protect their land. The farm is surrounded on all sides by illegal, under international law, Israeli settlements and has faced repeated settlement road encroachments, bulldozing and burning of orchards, and access restrictions. In the spring of 2024, the most recent outpost began with containers, and currently there are now 5 families in fully fitted homes within mere feet of the farm's fence. Since the Nassar family began the re-registration process of their land, the case has been repeatedly delayed and deferred by Israeli authorities. In 2019, the family finally received confirmation that their application was complete from 1991. The family, then a meeting for of the Israeli Registration Committee that one in 2019 was stalled, and then in 2021 was supposed to meet and determine next steps, but since then, no official results have been released. Between 21 and 23, a series of hearings were scheduled, repeatedly postponed, and the state's representatives failed to appear or requested more time. The family's attorney has filed multiple appeals to compel a decision. Yet the case continues to cycle between committees and courts without resolution. During these years, Tent of Nations has faced repeated attacks and destruction. Over 1,000 trees, including hundreds of olive trees, have been burned. Military bulldozers have entered the property and uprooted 50 olive trees. Another 50 mature trees were destroyed in another act of vandalism. Two of the Nassar brothers have been attacked and seriously injured by masked men. Roads have cut off 15 acres of the Tent of Nation lands. 75 apple trees have been destroyed and soil has been removed, and more continued road cutting through the Tent of Nations is happening. And 12 houses have been built in the outpost. Total damages have exceeded $175,000, and no one has been held accountable. Movement to and from the farm has also been severely restricted. What took a 15-minute trip from Bethlehem, where volunteers could travel freely, now takes more than 40 minutes through several villages. Since the war has started, 5 military gates have been installed along the route, allowing entire Palestinian communities to be sealed off without warning. These closures, combined with flying checkpoints, new surveillance infrastructure, and illegal roads bulldozed across the family's property, deepen the isolation of Tent of Nations and daily hardship of those who farm there. That is their story and the context in which they are living and work each day. And this is the letter that Daoud sent last week. Dear friends, we are living in a time when everything around us feels shaken and the future can seem fragile. We witness suffering and injustice, and we find ourselves asking, how do we live faithfully in such a time? Do we wait for stability before we act, before we hope, before we love? Or do we stand firm now, rooted not in the uncertainty of this world, but in the promises of God? We are not called to wait in fear, but to live with faith, trusting that God remains faithful to those who place their hope in Him. This is the message of Easter. It is a powerful declaration of victory. It proclaimed that suffering does not define us, and that death itself has been defeated. Jesus Christ did not avoid pain. He entered into it fully, carrying the cross with love and trust in the Father. Through his sacrifice and resurrection, he revealed an eternal truth that darkness can never overcome light, and evil will never overcome good. Even when hope feels buried beneath the weight of the world, we remember that seeds grow in darkness. Much of the work of a tree happens unseen, deep beneath the soil, before it rises and bears fruit. In the same way, we are called to remain faithful, to love when it is costly, to stand for justice when it is difficult, and to persevere when nothing seems to change. This is the kind of faith that transforms the world, a living, active, and courageous faith that reflects the light of Christ. In our ministry at Tent of Nations, despite the many challenges and uncertainties we face, we hold firmly to this calling, In the face of hardship, we choose faith over fear, hope over despair, and love over hatred. We refuse to surrender to a spirit of defeat. Instead, we rise as the people of God, called to be the salt of the earth and light of the world. Yes, we grieve. Yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we face deep brokenness. But we do not remain in despair. We stand firm in faith and set aside the mentality of victimhood. The darkness of Good Friday was real, but it was never the end. The dark clouds that gathered brought rain that nourished the earth, preparing it for new life. And on the third day, the stone was rolled away. Light broke through the darkness, and life triumphed over death. So let us not grow weary in doing good, and let us not harden our hearts in the face of suffering. Instead, let us become messengers of God's love in the world that desperately needs his light. Let us live in the resurrection, not only in words, but in our daily actions, in the courage to stand and speak truth, in the willingness to love, and in the determination not to give up. We are called to turn the valley of tears into a spring of life. May this Easter strengthen your faith, renew your spirit, and fill you with a deep and steady assurance that Christ has overcome the world. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. And with him, our hope rises strong, unshakable, and alive, with faith, love, and steadfast hope. Daoud Nassar. So then when I thought back to Jesus' encounter with Thomas, 8 days after the resurrection, that whole time, Thomas wasn't able to fully believe until he saw Jesus in the flesh. And he even said he was going to have to touch those wounds. I imagine those 8 days were filled with some anxiety of not knowing. And so when Jesus told Thomas that those who believe without seeing will be blessed, I don't think that Jesus meant it as a dig on Thomas. I think it was hopeful in that those who don't have to wait for the evidence are able to live fully into the joy and peace of Christ that is available. I wonder what life would be like for the Nassar family today if back in 1991, when the Israeli government deemed their land state land, that the family said, for us to really know that God is with us, we need to see this issue resolved very soon. Would there have been this Easter letter 35 years later that closes with, and in him our hope rises, strong, unshakable, and alive? I imagine their outlook could be much different. Yet having that belief doesn't mean that these past 35 years have not been painful, heartbreaking, unjust, and downright wrong. But it does mean that they know through all of this, every day, through every tree burning, every road built, every checkpoint opened, that God is with them and God loves them. So my hope is that we may all believe in the resurrected Jesus and believe that he has offered peace to each of us, just as he did to Thomas and all of the disciples. A belief that Jesus is still alive and working in our world today. A belief so that when we look around in our communities and around the world, we see God at work. It doesn't mean that we don't acknowledge the grief and the brokenness and the pain, but we see the light of Christ in those spaces also. Just as those early believers were given the words of John as an encouragement to stand firm in their faith and their belief in Jesus, this morning I want us to be encouraged in our faith. How is our belief in the risen Jesus shaping what we see? Do we see where Jesus is working in our lives and in our world? Do we see all people as children of God? Do we see God's arms wrapped around the world? Do we see the flicker of light in the darkness? Today, as we receive communion as believers in the risen Christ, may we go forth knowing and seeing Christ's presence in our world, in our lives, each day and every day. Amen.